Welcome to this episode of the Textual Talk, titled Job Hunting Exposed and How to Beat Pips from an HR Expert. In today's episode, we're joined by the insightful Humbly Sheik, a seasoned HR professional with over a decade of experience in talent acquisition and employee relations. Together, we're diving into the nuanced world of job searching, strategies, resume optimization, and the often misunderstood performance improvement plan, aka PIPs. This episode is packed with the actionable insights on how to craft compelling resumes that pass applicant tracking systems without falling into the common traps. We'll discuss leveraging LinkedIn effectively, the power of maintaining professional relationships with recruiters, and tips on negotiating better job offers. Humbly Sheik shares personal anecdotes about dealing with PIPs herself, offering advice on when to consider moving on and how to document your achievements meticulously. We'll also explore the evolving landscape of job applications, the importance of continuous interviewing, and the do's and don'ts of salary negotiations. For those navigating the complex job market, this episode provides valuable guidance on managing job transitions, avoiding oversharing on social media, and understanding the mechanics behind background checks and rehire eligibility. Whether you're actively job hunting or looking to safeguard your career, this episode is a treasure trove of expert advice and strategies to help you thrive. This video is being brought to you by Level Up in Tech. It's Q3 in 2024, but you still have time to get into the cloud. With the quick search for cloud in Indeed, you can see over 44,000 jobs are listed that is related or pertaining to the cloud. Now, that is a lot. But if you're watching this right now, you might be thinking, well, how do I learn the skills to get into the cloud? Well, we got you covered. Level Up in Tech is one of the best, if not the best, program related to getting people into the cloud. At Level Up in Tech, you can learn about server config and troubleshooting, the AWS cloud, infrastructure as code, CI/CD, scripting, containerization, and more. And also, they now also have a new multi-cloud AI engineering program that is dedicated to help you have the latest and greatest skills to help you be marketable in this tech market. They post more testimonials than almost any program that I could think of. Check them out. Now, if you're ready to start your cloud career today, then use the link in my description to go to levelupintech.com/tech so you can start your career. And plus, they'll know that I sent you. But on to the video. Welcome back to the Technical Talk Podcast. Well, I'm your host, HD, and we got another episode for you guys today. Matter of fact, the first of its kind, the very first HR professional on the show. I've been trying to get on for like 3 years, and she finally fit us into her busy schedule. We got none other than Humbly Sheik in the building, a.k.a. I was calling her Young DC earlier, or she said Young DMV. And we've come to pretty much, well, not me, because I don't work at HR. She's come to pretty much kind of fill you in on HR, some do's and don'ts maybe that you don't know about, and a lot of these myths that TikTok has taught you about when it comes to corporate America. But how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm hanging in there. Looking forward to the chat.
That's good. That's good. And I forgot to tell everybody, but y'all know, if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe, like, hit the bell icon so you can be notified when we're dropping our content. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, follow us and leave us a review. Help us out in the podcast analytics. Now, I'm so glad, like, you are my first HR guest. She gives a lot of gems on Twitter. And it's just funny. I wish I would have made a mention of, like, all the people I met. When we earlier we were talking about like the COVID time, like people we met through Twitter that pretty much have really, I don't know, it's crazy. Like we talk so much about, of course, LinkedIn is the GOAT. LinkedIn is the GOAT. However, I think Twitter right up there
yes,
with
it. Yes,
it is. I met some solid people from Twitter, like professionally wise too.
Yeah, Twitter's the GOAT too. I think they're actually trying to turn it into a job board in the next couple of years. So
I saw that. I think they're pushing like the beta out like to some people. So that would be definitely be interesting because I ain't gonna lie, I've been in consultations, I've been showing people how to use Google to search for jobs more than Indeed and LinkedIn because it just seems like it searches them much better.
It does. It's a great aggregator for data, pulls in a lot of good intel for you without having to search on 5 different sites.
Yeah, I wouldn't even be surprised knowing Google. Hey, y'all, we got the Google job search app or whatever. Like, it's on standalone app.
Yep.
They're notorious for doing stuff like that.
Yeah, it's coming. But, I'm telling you. I wouldn't be surprised if I've seen a Google Jobs app in the making.
Right. Ain't no telling. I got some friends that work at Google. Maybe I can ask
them. Oh, yeah. And get the plug, that percentage.
Right. But let me turn this up some. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself with your alter ego to the listeners?
Sure. So I have been within HR and TA, or talent acquisition, for over a decade now. I've worked in a plethora of different industries. GovTech, of course, the DoD space, also nonprofits, SaaS, startups, audit and advisory, pretty much everywhere, just to see if HR and recruiting are truly universal. And if, you know, what works for a candidate in one industry will work for the other. So it's something I'm passionate about, something I've always wanted to remain in, just to make that impact. There's a lot of folks that, you know, they feel information is gatekeeped and that they can't really push through to cross over from that application portal to the interview. So I take it upon myself to share that information and really make an impact in making sure that we land that job.
Perfect. Now, here goes some cool questions. Talent acquisition, recruiting, HR. What is the, first of all, well, let's educate the people.
Yeah.
What is talent acquisition?
So talent acquisition houses recruiting. So that could be, of course, the person that's reaching out to you to pull you in, prepare you for the interview, you know, do that initial screening. So that could be a recruiter, could be a sourcer, could be even somebody like that's an admin or backup support to a recruiter. So that's like a coordinator. And that it kind of varies, but with most industries, it differs from HR. So talent acquisition and recruiting, that's more so candidate focused, and HR is more so employee focused.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about tech, we really hear people tell people, hey, why don't you do HR in tech? And if I'm being honest, I feel like HR is one of the roles that actually can benefit a lot of folks if they actually get in. You have like solid HR people that could fight and vouch for really the functions of HR. So I guess my next question would be on a, like if you were describing this to a fifth grader, how would you explain what human resources is?
So, sure. So HR, again, it's for the protection of the company. So within HR, you have several different branches. You have like compensation. Those are the folks that are looking at the industry, the market, to see how much we should be presenting to candidates, or even how much you should receive for your increase, end of year increase or bonus structure. Then you also have your HRBPs. So these are actually individuals you would go to if there's an issue with your manager. You know, you don't feel like you're being treated fairly. So they're more so helping with like mediation. And then you also have other assets of HR that can help with the administrative portion. That's your generalist. They can touch several different areas, which is great, which is how I started in my career. I was able to touch different areas so I can figure out which, you know, where I wanted to kind of fall. And then it kind of goes from there. So you have your TA, which is, we're separate now. We weren't back in the day, but we were all together. So ultimately I look at HR, you know, it's one big machine. But again, the ultimate purpose is to drive the company best in their own best interests, not always in ours. It's always within the interests of the company and what puts them in a good light.
Thank you for that eloquent breakdown.
Of course.
Now, you mentioned something cool. You mentioned the term generalist, and I haven't seen a lot of generalist roles in a while. I remember, I think it was 6 years ago. Yeah, 6 years ago, working at Optiv, they had all these different roles that came up, and one of the roles was security generalist. And it was same thing, same purpose as your HR role was that we're going to hire you and let you do these different things, and then you figure out what you want to do. And one of my friends, I think they started off as a generalist and they started moving into like an engineer path. Mm-hmm. And I'm asking about the generalist question because I think that could possibly be a solution for some of the hiring woes that we're seeing, along with maybe more apprenticeships and maybe people doing more internships. Because there are people that want to do a lot of the jobs, but there are a lot of things that are preventing them from doing the jobs. And I think a lot of times a generalist doesn't require as much experience as a person that is not a generalist. They actually specialize in something. What's your take on that?
Sure. So I always recommend the generalist for those that are entry level, those that are kind of just starting out, because there are a lot of companies that are looking for someone that can wear many hats. Why? Because financially, it's always cheaper for the company to have you perform several duties, several different roles than to actually hire, you know, two or three different individuals. So you definitely, as you're breaking into an industry, you want to take on a generalist route. And then once you become proficient or you find an area that really sticks with you, then that's when you niche down. But coming in the door, you definitely want to look for generalist opportunities. So that way you have that ample experience to kind of play around with different functions, different technologies. And then from there, you branch out.
Perfect. Yeah. So hopefully they took that note down. Now, we are on what you call, well, really, you got tech Twitter and then you got black tech Twitter. And low key, if I get a chance to do it at this part of the episode, I'm going to find that picture of Mufasa talking to Simba and when he's asking him about that. And it's going to say, that's black tech Twitter. Don't go there, because as helpful as it could be, it is very toxic. We see so many different things on there to where, like, people like yourself or me or others who've been in the game, when we used to speak out about certain things, people would kind of say we were hating or doing this or that. But when we fast forward 2 to 3 mm-hmm. years now, the things that we told people about, they had to learn on their own. Exactly. As people, grandma say, you got to learn that, you know, fat media is greasy.
Yeah.
What's your take on all the horrible advice when it will pertain to HR related things?
Whew.
And listen, you can go as this podcast is meant for talking.
I know.
So if you some stuff you want to get off your chest.
You know, HR, you know, we're used to holding our cards really close to our chest, you know, not really sharing. But I can say it's difficult because it's difficult because you definitely want to give everybody their chance, you know, to help, right? You don't want to stifle anyone's voice. You don't want anyone to feel like their opinion doesn't matter. However, there's also a way you have to handle it with grace when there's incorrect information being put out there. So it's kind of teetering the fence and trying to figure out what's the best way to handle it. But there's been so much misinformation on Twitter regarding, like, with an applicant tracking system, right? Like, that's like your mailbox for all of the job applications that are coming in. And we, you know, we're the sorters. So we're taking that mail, we're sending it in the right direction, and we're screening as it comes in. And I've seen this common misconception that people think, you know, it's this digital function, almost like the Wizard of Oz, like this big green man that's just declining people as they're coming in. It's not. It's us. We are actually people reviewing your resume and doing that sorting. So that's one misconception that happens all the time. Also, if you see, like, I say, a certain demographic reaching out for job opportunities, a lot of people automatically think that is a scam. That's not always the case. They just kind of mine data differently than we do. But it's a lot of common misconceptions out there, and it gains a lot of traction, not just on Twitter, but on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, you touched on some cool stuff, and we're going to actually reel it back in so I can really let you let loose. I happen to feel that some people should not be talking about stuff because they should not. Their voice should be silenced because they don't know enough yet.
Yes.
And you're leading the sheep to the slaughter.
Agreed.
I'm a person to where I try to give people grace, and I am savvy enough to talk in a way to not really let people know I'm talking about you, but I'm getting the message out there.
Okay.
There are so many things that think about. I don't think people really realize that, hey, you know, people you work with, they got social media too.
Yep.
And a lot of people have become very, you know, chatty patty-ish when it comes to being on Twitter, just saying stuff that's, they go on there and give us way too much information when this should be stuff you either tell people you're close to or keeping it on the low. A person, of course, that I ain't gonna say his name on the on the podcast, but they got a song called, you know, what do you say? Is it, I think it's either keeping on a down low or keeping on low.
Yeah. Got it. So,
like, because I used to say, like, for example, one of the things that I had an issue with, remember I sent this to you a couple of months ago. It was about the young man who got senior roles in the cloud. And he pretty much said on live, hey, my experience that is on my LinkedIn is fake. And he was saying this on live. And I was saying how if you make it in like that by the grace of God, like, don't tell anybody. Just let your experience build up. And then you could tell somebody whenever, because at the end of the day, it is what it is. Because we know, and this is why your HR, I'm going to actually ask you what happens when you guys find stuff out mm-hmm. like this. The guy was oversharing so much. He had his offer letters on there. The people, the recruiter's name and stuff was on there. Like, I found these people on LinkedIn. I'm not a person that's going to say, hey, this guy lied to you. But I was like, just imagine somebody who's jealous, who's trying to do stuff the right way, and they decide they want to be malicious and go report you.
Right.
And if you had an at-will company, they could probably just say, hey, you fired, you falsified your documentation. Exactly.
And that does happen quite frequently.
Yeah. And I don't think that's the thing. Like, people are like, I get it. You want people to get in, but I can also see past what's going on. When somebody's doing something like that, they have this person on here, they have the person who runs the program. They are trying to get signups for the program, which is get your money. But you have to, if you care about the people you have on, I would say, you know what? We're not going to do this with you just because you're too fresh.
Right.
And you know, you're a little too hot. Let's try this with somebody else that's been doing it for about a year or two. And we don't have to necessarily talk about that year. Because think about it, it is a buzz. Hey, this person went from, you know, no experience to 200,000 in 5 years. Everybody knows the math, math like that, unless like you got immediate transferable, like great transferable skills, and you've been specialized in something for like, you know, 6-7 years, and then you come over here and you get like a role that you can do.
Right.
This person's experience relative to that was of nothing.
Right.
And so that's some of the things that people are selling, and then that's why you have the issue where people who are trying to do good work don't get supported, or the person that you're trying to say, hey, don't you think it's a little misleading? Or the person want to say you're hating on them when you've been in the game longer than them. It's like, I don't have nothing to hate on. I actually care about the person you are parading around more than you do, because I would never do them like
right.
that.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Like, so actually, this is a better question. In your experience, have y'all dealt with that before? Like, finding out people lied about their experience, they lied about their degree.
Yes.
Their names.
100%. So we've had several instances with several of my employers. We've had instances where individuals, you know, they either have multiple streams of income and they advertise that and it comes back to bite them in the end. We also have had individuals that, you know, they falsify documentation, falsify what's on their resume. And then when it comes down to performance, the managers are noticing it's taking a little bit longer for them to ramp up than it should within a normal background of someone that matches that expertise. So it happens a lot more frequently. It's just not as advertised, but it does happen, which is why, you know, even with all of my friends in my circle, you know, I'm always like the HR person. So I'm always texting like, hey, don't say that on Twitter. Hey, don't mention you have multiple streams of income, because you never know, like you said, who's watching. And once your name gets out there, you're going to gradually build a larger audience. And that's going to come back where? To your employers. Your coworker can find your information. And now everything is out. And then on top of that, people don't realize recruiters talk. So I know several recruiters in several different industries, and there are like group chats. There are LinkedIn groups where people are sharing, you know, is anybody talk to this guy, because he seems this, like, you never want to be quote unquote blacklisted. So you have to be very cautious about what you share and what you demonstrate.
No, I agree. And that's why I did the episode, my friend Justice, where it was like, okay, cool. If you want to be overemployed, we're going to show you how to do it the right way, like your own company and doing all this the other stuff versus trying to be different W-2s. Then sometimes people are, you know, working with competitors. Yes. And so that's a conflict of interest. Like it's a lot of things you got to know on how to navigate that some people are not doing. And yeah, then you got people doing it wrong. Like there's been so many stories where a person had like three, like then.
Uh-oh. Disclaimer. Me,
people who are too. No. People who are greedy. Like, yeah. Why you just can't be settled with, well, this will happen. The people who are truly skilled and are overemployed, they probably will only do two.
Yep.
Maybe three if it was super manageable and very manageable, not to where they have to do all these different jumps and hoops. A lot of people aren't as skilled yet, but they're working roles that require them to work a lot, and they're juggling like two and three, four. And what happens is now they got to pick one when it comes to return to office, and fools are working the other job where they're at office and losing all the yep. jobs because they're figuring out, hey, you working for somebody else on our, like, they, like, it's so stupid. Like, how greedy can you get? That's why, like, people always talk about, like, that's one of the key things. The love of money yes. will always make you become a fool. Or what they say, a fool in his gold will soon be, shall be parted, soon yes. be parted.
Yep. Absolutely. And it happens a lot. You have to know when to say when. You know, it's becoming normal now to have, you know, two jobs. Like you said, some even have three. But you really have to ensure that you can balance those loads, because there will be some days where you are working about 12 to 14 hours. There are some days where your manager may try to throw you a curveball and just throw a meeting on your calendar to see if you actually show up. It's just so many different ways that they can kind of test it out to see. And they do know that, hiring managers know. So if you're fully remote, they will do that. They will, hey, are you available right now? Hey, can we chat? And they kind of start to have a tally for me when you're, no, I can't. No, I'm busy. Can we push this back? So you have to be very mindful of that.
Yeah. And you know, there are only so many times you can say, my kid not feeling right. good. I had to take them to the doctor. I got to go to the
internet is down. Right.
Yeah. It's only so many times you can do that. So in, like you said, some places do track how active you are at work. What are you doing? Everybody not basing you on what you completed. Now, if you get a place where on what you completed, it don't matter.
Right.
But that's what I say, typically for people who have a little bit more experience, try that. Like, because I have clients too. He sent me something like, overemployed. I was like, you need to get good at the first.
That's right.
First. Because I'm like, one of your jobs is going to have you doing a lot.
Yes.
And
a solid foundation.
You're going to have a chance yes. to do that. And I was just like, look, I get it. Now, I do understand too, it has gotten very expensive. So I understand the allure of doing two jobs. So I get it. Like for me, I'm the only person at work. I got different, this is revenue stream, and other things that I do are revenue stream. So I do understand how you got to make your own way. But like I always say, you got
to
be smart.
You have to.
Got
to
be smart. Yes. Everybody don't, like, as my dad say, everybody ain't got to go. No, everything got going on.
Right. 100%. So I'm just hoping that, you know, everyone listens, especially to your advice, and they take it with caution, because it's a lot of folks that are being let go. And then, you know, God forbid, other employers within your same industry, your same demographic find out, that word is going to spread. So it'll be twice as hard for you to find an opportunity once you've been laid off.
Yeah. And let me see if I could find this. So one of my, I call this viral for me because I don't really do a lot of numbers on TikTok.
Okay.
But let me see this.
Departments do not double check. After your first job out of college, these employees don't check. They don't contact.
Listen, man, stop listening to people. I tried to click on his page to see if he had his LinkedIn or something up to see what he actually do. Please stop listening to people. For example, they talking about, they don't check nothing. Do you know when I was working for Goldman Sachs, Goldman Sachs background check was about as lengthy as it was when I tried to get, not tried, but when I got my security clearance back in 2014. Goldman Sachs wanted all this information. Hey, you said you worked here and here and here. We need proof of that. And you can go back and find proof of where you worked at. So I want people to stop lying to y'all, telling y'all to do this. Maybe on some low-level BS jobs, but when you're trying to have jobs that really making real money, they are making sure that they invested into a person that is who they say they are. Also, since 2020, the inception of people interviewing for people and fake names and fake resumes and fake experience has been at an all-time high. And now they are putting third parties to the test to make sure that you're not lying. So y'all can try that if y'all want to,
But in a lot of tech companies, that's not going to fly. Don't fake the funk. Just be honest. If you ain't got your skills up, get your skills up. Ain't no reason to lie. Everybody had to get here at some point. Nobody just started off just being a big timer. No Manny Fresh or Baby. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Let me stop sharing it.
That's right.
So what you think about people telling people, hey, just say you now funny part is you could say you was a manager at Circuit City, you did IT for Payless. You could joke about that. They don't have nobody.
VP at Toys R Us. You never know.
Right. But you know, Toys R Us technically is back a little bit. They're all in the Macy's. Mm-hmm.
But what time frame? You can say that you were a VP when they were they weren't right. merged.
Like you could technically do that, but they'll probably try to go back, like I said. But I would say, depending on what type of background check they mm-hmm. do. Like, because I know, like, for me, I probably never listed every company I worked at on my resume. Certain ones require certain things.
You don't
things.
Have to, yeah. So,
yeah, that's, I just, like, I've had people, like, all type of things that's happened. Like, I remember, like, I know in your region, because you guys started all this, DC is to blame. DC started the tech schools and the boot camps of, hey, we created this company and we gonna say you worked here.
Don't say the boot camp. Ooh, don't say the B word.
They started all that, or the programs. They started it. Now, I know some people who've been able to do this and they've been able to accomplish things with it, and kudos to them, but it's not for everybody because you just can't. I had a young lady, sometime where she got a free consultation out of me 3 years ago. And she had like all this security terminology on her resume. And I was like, well, do you know what a SIM is? She was like, no. I was like, if you're going to lie, at least know the lie.
Right.
So back to when you're talking about, we look at performance and all this other mm-hmm. stuff. Quick story. I think I was on paternity leave or something like that. Back when I was working at Optiv, I was talking to my manager, asking how things was going. She was like, not good. We had to let go of a person because he wasn't who I interviewed. He couldn't do the job. The person who got actually hired could not do the job. So we had to fire them. And so I started telling people about that. I said, okay, you can try to get over it now. People ain't playing with you. And especially if you work for a company that's in the at-will state, yes. You're gone.
Correct. 100%. Yeah. It happens. It happens a lot. I mean, what I can tell you candidly about the background check process is, you know, they only check what you put on there. So I've had, you know, when I'm a career coach as well. So I've had clients that are concerned because they're like, well, you know, I only stayed at this company for, you know, 1 month, 2 months. And, you know, maybe the hiring team is a little, you know, a little salty because you left. I'm famous. I'm a residual quitter for doing the same thing. If I'm not happy, I do resign.
That might be the name of this episode.
But. They're like, you know, if I leave this office, it's going to negatively impact me. No. Again, we only check what you put on that background check form. Nobody is walking around in a turncoat and a detective hat going around the DMV area, wherever you are, to find who you worked for. But what is on that background check has to be validated. It will be verified. Like I said, even if, you know, by God's grace, you make it all the way through the interview process, you bamboozle everyone, they will figure it out. Within that first 90 days, you're still in your probationary period throughout that 90-day function, which is why a lot of companies don't chip into your retirement, you know, until you hit that 91st day. Sometimes benefits don't start right away. It's because they want to test out to see if you truly can back up everything that you've demonstrated. So yes, we do check, we do verify. And then when there are calls for employee verification, that's a part of the background check. So a recruiter or whoever is hired to conduct that background check, they will ask, is this person eligible for reemployment or rehire? If the answer is no, you won't more than likely pass the background check. So you have to keep that in mind as well.
But you know what? I think that's kind of unfair.
Yeah.
The rehire part, because you could have not did anything wrong, but they feel the way you live. And they say, I'm not gonna lie. My name is not the best at Goldman Sachs.
Oh.
I'm just gonna be honest.
Wait a minute.
Because I I was so upset. I made an I quit video because I, you know, everybody else did the I quit Goldman Sachs videos too. And I put like one of my coworkers, I kind of put them in a tough spot. Like it's to the point where like friends of mine that work there, technically they can't like come on this show just because they probably have an issue with it, which I understand. I ain't mad at that. I'd never be mad at somebody choosing their livelihood over doing something to me. I'm not picky like that. But at the same time, do I plan to ever go back there? Probably not. Absolutely everything there. But I also know with people being upset, I said a lot of things that was true. And I know that they were true based on some of the things I found out after I left there. But it would suck if they would say, nah, he can't come back. And then I get denied. But I'm like, see, what had happened was, and go from there. But I learned from that. I looked at it as like cool content. I really didn't think about it. So like a lot of times, like if I'm in interview cycles or I'm interviewing in different places, I'll just private the video just because people can see it or whatever. But that was, I'm known as a truth teller. So I have to tell the truth.
Yeah. Same. It also depends on your tenure though. Like, were you established in your career? Because there are some people that, you know, they resort to that and they've only been working for maybe 1, 2, 3 years. So at that point.
Yeah, I was already established at that point. Cause I've been there. I guess it don't matter because like right after that, I went to JP.
Exactly. And then because your experience and your tenure spoke for itself. Like you still made it through that extensive interview process. You still worked there for quite a bit of time. Whereas if you've only been in the industry for like 1 or 2 years and you have your first ding right away, that's not going to carry well to the next employer. So it also depends on how many years of experience in the game.
Yeah. So now let's actually get into some of those like questions that ask us on these job applications.
Okay.
Why does it matter if somebody's ever been fired or not? Like, I don't expect anybody to be honest with that, if they actually been fired or not.
It matters because the first thing you want to check for past experience is integrity. You want to see if that person is going to kind of admit it, you know, what the circumstances were behind that. Because again, HR is for the protection of the interests of the company. So we don't want whatever behavior happened there to take place at this company. So they're asking one to see if you're actually will be honest and speak on that. Two, they want to make sure that behavior is not repeated. But ultimately, I can tell you a lot of employers have removed that question. It doesn't matter. You know, if we need to hire someone, you're the best of the best. You're going to be hired. So I wouldn't necessarily, you know, hold that question in such high regard. Because, I mean, in this day and age, technically, I think what they say, 1 in 3 people will have been laid off or fired within the next couple of years. So the answer for that is yes for a lot of people.
Right, right. So here's another question, guys. So like I said, I have a client. He was telling me how, and it was weird. This is just how the game goes. He previously, a week or 2 weeks before, got very great feedback from everybody, or they didn't say anything about him negatively. Then to come to find out, and actually, I'm a double check because I want to make sure, I want to educate everybody the correct way on this.
Okay.
That's what we do over here. We educate.
All right, I'm here for it. Educate.
I don't know if he deleted it, but I know what he asked. He asked me about something about a PIP. And I was like, I've never been on a PIP. But if you do get on one, it's time to find another job. And he said, would you ever just leave? Or I guess it just depends on the situation. I said, you'll always leave. You never get off a PIP, whether it's warranted or unwarranted. And he was like, would you just resign or put in for severance, even if the next job hasn't come yet? And I was like, shoot, depends on the amount. I was like, no, do you? Can you spend more time looking for a job? And I was asking him, did he mess up at work? And he said, they saying it's work performance, which is a slap in the face because of all the hours I work. Honestly, this job been taking a toll on my mental health. I wanted to leave 7 months ago, and I've been trying to hold on because it's easier to find a job when you have one. But yeah, he was 1 year and 3 months in. Yeah, so I'm going to catch up with him. But like, I think that happens to a lot of people.
Yeah, I've been placed on one, unrighteously so, which most of us do go through. But my advice, I mean, I personally, I fought it out. I took the legal route. And it has
to. Tell us about that.
You said tell, what'd you say?
As high level as you can. I had one of my people, she gave us a experience about how she got fired from her first job and got put on the PIP because she just was ignorant to corporate America. So I thought this would probably be like a cool section to talk about, like to reach somebody who been either might be on a PIP or don't know what to do if they get on one. So yeah.
Yeah. So with a PIP, sadly for a lot of companies, it's just another way to save money pretty much. You're doing another layoff. And you're trying to nitpick to legally excuse that person from employment. That's not something that's widely known. So I guess it is now. It's flabbergasted. But for me personally, I was placed on a PIP and I felt it was racially motivated. And the company had a lot of managers in place that should not have been managing. They just weren't good at it whatsoever. And for me, you know, I kind of went to bat for myself and I had documentation ready. I had my metrics. I'm very big on, my mentor used to always say, cover your ashtray. I am very big on documenting, saving emails. Whenever I receive an accolade, somebody says, great job. You know, this, I call them impact statements. I always have that stuff ready. So when anybody can negate my impact, that's not true because this is what you said on our performance assessment. This is what you said on the mid-year. I'm ready. So for them, they didn't think I was communicating all of the accomplishments and what I was doing day to day. So for me, I contacted my local legal office. I made sure my HRBP was involved. And I went to bat because personally, when I wanted to leave, I wanted to make sure everything was pure. There was nothing in my record because what they'll try to do is sneak that PIP into your employment record when you resign. And that way, you know, when somebody calls to say if you're eligible for rehire, you know, they can say, well, no, because we had to let her go, this, this, and this. So it's a sneaky way for a lot of employers to do it. Now, however, you know, if you're solid in the industry, if you're continuing to interview, you keep your name out there, you can definitely just resign. And then when you speak to that next recruiter, that next hiring manager, just relay that there was just a mutual agreement that opportunity wasn't within your best interest to continue. So it honestly depends. Do you have the fight in you to keep dealing with that toxicity? Or do you want to just, you know, clean your hands of it and move on to something that's better for you?
Perfect. Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say they took the legal route.
Yes.
And I mean, like, people don't know, like who to contact. Like, do they just go on Google, I've been placed on a PIP, who could give me legal advice? Like, what are they, who, like, when you say, like, local legal person, like, who is that? Like, what should they look
for? So your local labor office, but your first step is always going to be going to your HRBP. You have to. I know a lot of people say it's scary. You know, we all know, again, they're not operating in your interest rather the company's interest. But the first thing that labor office is going to ask you is, well, did you talk to HR about it? That's the first step, right, that they want you to accomplish.
Well, paper
so chair. You have to do that. It doesn't mean you want to stay. It just means you try. You try to make an amends with it. But your local labor office, you know, they'll kind of put through your information to a lawyer that specializes. You can hire private counsel. But for those that are, you know, they want to rein in their financials, their funds, you can just go through your local Department of Labor office and they will definitely work your case through.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect. That's mm-hmm. excellent advice. Hopefully that helps someone, because we also know, like, we've reported on some of the things to where, like, some of these bigger tech companies have, they're pretty sneaky.
Yes, they are.
They'll do something like, oh, you must move back in here. You must be in office, whatever RTO. Time, knowing that you don't stay. Nowhere. Yeah. And then try to put you on a PIP because of mm-hmm. that. It's like, no, I don't stay nowhere. So they make ways to force you to quit, pretty much. So like you say, so they can say something.
Exactly.
No, you're definitely right about that. Now, some of the other things that people may or may not know about HR, I guess, in your experience or your opinion, what are some common misconceptions that we have about human resources?
So I'd say, you know, just perusing Twitter, There's a lot of disdain towards recruiters. I will not say that every recruiter is the best at their job. I will not stand up for all of them across the world. But what I will say is we take a lot of heat for what hiring managers should be held accountable for. So there are individuals that'll speak with a recruiter. You know, the recruiter is giving a range that's well below, you know, what they're looking for. That's not us. We don't make that decision. The hiring manager does. We have really limited say on what the entire compensation package looks like. Like, we can go to bat for you. We can say this person is making this. They have this skill set, this experience. They're qualified. But ultimately, the hiring manager has to say yay or nay. So that's a very common misconception. Another one is that we're responsible for the hiring decision. So they think that, you know, because maybe we have a disdain for them in some way, that we are the ones that said no. It's not true. And once we pass you through to the hiring manager, we do our screen, they are given that final say so. And I will say, it may not seem like it because, you know, maybe you don't hear from us every single day, maybe a couple of days or weeks are passing, but we're still going to bat for you. There's a lot of us that advocate. There are a lot. I go to hiring managers every day. You know, what's the update on this person? What's the update? What's the update? But again, they have to tell me what it is so I can convey that to you. So we're not holding information to be spiteful. We're literally just waiting for it to come through. So we take a lot of heat because, you know, we're customer and client facing. But ultimately, it's not always us. We're just the ones that are kind of welcoming you into the company.
This video is being sponsored by Textual Consulting. Are you still struggling to get into cybersecurity? Are you not getting interviews? Do you have a bad resume? Or is it all the above? Well, if that's you, then we got you covered at Textual Consulting. My name is Henry Davis. I'm a career coach and a cybersecurity professional, and I've helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people get into cybersecurity with my coaching and my content that you've seen in various places. Now, I specialize in specifically getting people in the blue team, that would be incident response or SOC analysts. I can cover everything from your entry level to your medium to your advanced skills and really help you outperform your resume. You don't believe me? Check out some of these testimonials that I've had from recent clients. So if you're interested, click the link in my bio, textualconsulting.com/offerings, to see what offerings that we have available for you. Now, back to the show. So one of the questions I actually had, and I don't know if HR is part of this or not, I love the companies that when they give a range, it's for wherever you stay. Right. It's not based on a region. Because you'll see a job, let's say it pays, let's say you saw the range was between 140 to 195, but you stay in another area and say, oh, well, we're targeting about, you know, 145, 150. But you see that if I stay somewhere else, I could get, you know, 175, 185. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to justify it on the region thing. And you're like, well, hold up. It ain't that cheap down here no more. Like, how do we get companies to move around from that? Because it's like, it's not based on if that person's more qualified or you. It's based on wherever you stay, which I think is kind of stupid. Yeah. I feel like you should get paid whatever they have the budget to pay them wherever they stay at. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. And I mean, and you're actually right to feel that way. Again, it's another tactic for companies to save some money. They don't want to pay everyone the same rate coming in. Any way they can squeeze out a few pennies, they will do so. So the cost of living influence that reigns in on the salary range. So sometimes that comes from, you know, like with me in like the GovTech DoD space, that comes from the government. So we don't typically have a say. The hiring manager can go back and forth and say this rate is not doable. This is not it. But ultimately the government has to, you know, go and say, yes, we can give you more. But sometimes it's limited depending on the industry. Ultimately, we try, you know, we even have people now within the compensation range, you know, compensation recruiters and admin focused individuals that are doing that comp research and that market data. The best thing you can do as a candidate is you have to be aware of what your worth is. And then when you come to the table, you don't just say, well, I want 150. No, I want 150 because I looked at neighboring companies. I looked at your competitors. They are offering this rate, you know, according to, you know, like PayScale or any of the salary tools out there. You know, you can use that to back up your claims. And at that point, the company is going to take a look like, well, wait a minute, something is off. And that allows us to go to bat for you as recruiters.
Perfect. And so I actually had another question while you were talking. And I was thinking about, now I got to even remember what I was thinking about because I had it and then I was listening to you talk. You were talking about money and I definitely got to cut this part out.
Is it comp?
Who's calling me? The recruiter calling
me. Really? Oh, put it on speaker. Let me hear.
Let me see. So while we're like, I'm trying to remember what I was going to talk about.
Okay.
I worked my NBC contract through them. So they constantly hit me up from time to time, see what I got.
All right.
And that's just something I always say until I leave this current job. Since I'm going to leave, that's when I'll talk more about my fun stuff I've
done. Keep interviewing though. Never stop.
I interviewed with Experian and AT&T last week. And then I did my first interview with the director of Toyota.
Okay. Today.
I got a panel coming up soon and I got like some other crap coming up. I'll just be applying or people reach out.
Let's do a mock session.
I'm never not interviewing. Just like you say, like I'm never not.
That's right. Keep the door open. You never know.
Yeah, I do it because it also, anything I learn or different questions I'm asked, I'm like, now what I do is, let me see if this thing is even still recording. It is. Oh my gosh.
What happened?
I've been recording on my thing for like 5 hours from like since 2 o'clock from like the interview I had earlier. So I'm going to have to go in and fix that. But I've just been recording my interviews and I have been using like my AI tools to, I'll give it a prompt. Hey, based off this thank you letter I sent to the current company, based off of the people that are in this message, include these topics and made me a thank you letter. And so now I'm doing that and just different ways to help them out so they can automate some things as well as, hey, here go the prompts. These are the type of questions they ask. Pull out the questions that, you know, these people ask me during the interview.
Oh, so that is awesome. Look at you being a cybersecurity.
Yeah. Man, what else the question I was going to ask you? The last question to ask you, I can't even remember it because that's what I get for not writing it down. I know it's about compensation and stuff like that. And then I think.
Is it negotiation?
It wasn't going to be about negotiation. It was going to be something else and I can't think of what it was. Oh, well, whatever it is will come back to me. So what I would say is. All right. So. While we're kind of like still in that same vein. Mm-hmm. Oh, got it. I found it.
Okay. See?
I was talking to a friend recently and I think they got laid off from their job or something. And he's like in the GovTech space. And he was saying how ironically it would benefit them right now if they had a college degree. Mm. And we see all the time where people saying, oh, you don't need a degree. You don't need a degree. Just go do this and do this. And I'm always saying like, hey, whatever works for you. But I say a degree can't hurt you. It can only help you. What do you see about that? Especially like us when it comes to HR.
Yeah. So what I'll say is, sadly, you know, for certain demographics, the bar is raised. So if some companies, you know, they are like for one of my clients and consultants, they're more willing to work with you, right? So if you don't have, let's say your bachelor's degree, the position calls for it, they'll say, okay, well, if you don't have that, then you must have at least 10 years of experience. Whereas if you had the bachelor's degree, they would only be looking for maybe like 5 or 6. So there is wiggle room sometimes depending on your tenure. Additionally, I would recommend getting the degree. A degree can absolutely help you. Depending on your field, if you don't have the degree, sometimes if you have the necessary certifications, they'll kind of absolve that degree requirement because they see those certs. They know those are very hard to obtain. It really ultimately depends on your industry. IT is a little bit different than like finance, than HR, BA. So with my positions, most of them are IT. We have wiggle room on the degrees. As long as certain certifications are had and tenure is there. But if you're just starting out, definitely get a degree. And furthermore, if your job is tolerable, use those professional development budgets. Make it work for you. You can have a company literally help to pay a good chunk towards your degree. So I'd say I use budgets in full. So definitely take advantage of it.
No, that's facts. Because I know, like, for me, when it came to negotiate, they was like, all right, cool. You got, you know, this master's, you got this amount of experience, you got this. Okay. I can make a good case. The HR person will tell me, and shout out to her because I ain't going to say her name on here that way. She don't.
We advocate, okay?
She was a sister, and she advocated for me, and she got me. What did she get me? She got me a sign on and a comp buyout.
Wow.
So, and that's how I learned about a comp buyout. So when some places say, hey, well, we don't do sign ons, I was like, well, do y'all do comp buyouts? So I can show you where my bonus is supposed to be, and you know, you could pay that.
That's right.
It'll be like my bonus. And that's my first time. I was like, she really, you know, looked out for me.
Yes, so, make that the title for this chat. Advocate. So everybody knows we do. We advocate.
Advocating for the, what we say, the residual
quitter? Yeah. And the job hopper. Yes, 100%.
There we go. Residual quitting and job hopping. Mm-hmm. That's actually an interesting title. I'm gonna play with it, see how it works in the YouTube search.
Okay.
Bar. So piggybacking off of what I just said, what would be some of the, from an HR standpoint, what would be some of the do's and don'ts when it comes to people saying, all right, boom, they got their offer letter, but it ain't what they want? What would be their do's and don'ts to negotiate that salary to something that's a little bit more favorable in their favor?
Sure. So for me, I always recommend, you know, for myself personally, all my clients, my friends, my family, always negotiate. You never know. Whether that's just an extra $5K, whether it's a sign-on bonus, extra PTO, you know, if you work remotely, if that's money towards your utilities, your Wi-Fi, you know, anything, you want to always explore every avenue. So when you're approaching a discussion, you can say, you know, this is great. I appreciate the offer. However, upon doing further research and with the other interviews that I'm present in as of right now, they're offering X amount. Can you meet that amount? Or is there anything that you can do to increase the total comp package? And then once you do that, you always have to, again, reiterate the word of the day is impact. So when you first meet with that recruiter, you're supposed to use them as a resource. You ask, you know, what does the ideal candidate look like for this position? And then you take that and then you use that when you negotiate. But you said you're looking for somebody that can do XXX. Well, I'm able to do that. You know, here are my metrics. These are my success factors. When you're advocating for yourself, you have to have data to back all of that up. So when you're negotiating, it's not just, I want an extra $10K. Okay, well, why? What are you bringing that I can justify to the hiring manager? We have to bring this person aboard because look at all they've done. You know, look at the impact that they can make. So that's what I would say when approaching, you know, just approaching any type of negotiation. You know, have all your cards there so you can show why you deserve that amount.
Right. And I was going to ask you, are there instances like where people have over leveraged themselves?
Yes.
In negotiations where they, you say, you know what, give me that. You know, you go over there and do that. But also, I've seen sometimes where people, companies will say, okay, well, you said you got offered by Google. Show us Google's offer. Does the candidate have to show them that? Or what happens if a company ever asks that? Should they just back away from negotiating or what? Because technically, they could just be calling you a bluff. Like,
yeah,
we know you ain't got no offer from Google.
And big tech will do that. But, so big tech, sometimes they will ask. I know when I was in big tech, they did ask, you know, well, if you do have another offer letter, can we see it? Is there any type of like documentation that can confirm that you actually have this offer? They will do that. So that's why it's very key. You have to be careful with your wording. It's not, I received another offer. No, it's, I am interviewing with other companies and this is the range that they are presenting me with. You can't argue with that. I mean, that's just market data. So it's just word choice.
The later stages.
Yes.
Yeah, I tell people that all the time. Like, I don't know. Most of the time, I'm pretty nice to recruiters when they come in my inbox. They'll say some number that's definitely nothing I'd be interested in. But I'll say, you know, I think I know a couple people that could do that. And then I'll say, you know, future references, like, if you would be interested in me, I'm interested in, like, this type of
which range. Is awesome. And, say, oh, and we actually take that, like, data back to our managers, by the way. So if we reach a candidate that has a lot of great experience, but they're just out of our range, we go back and say, hey, you know, this is all the experience you're looking for, but based upon X amount of people that we've talked to, this isn't a great range. So that's actually super helpful for us. And what that happens is, you know, as recruiters, you know, being the job hoppers that we are sometimes, we're going to other companies, and because we had that great interaction with you, we're going to continue to have that network grow. And you never know, you know, I could reach out to you months, years down the road, and you have an opportunity because we had that great interaction.
Yeah, I'm currently constantly teaching my clients that I don't want my network to be a one-way street where, like, you're just helping me. It needs to be beneficial. So that's why I'm always trying to send people to the recruiters to make their job a little bit easier if I know they can do something that you know, I'm not particularly interested in. And it's worked for me. Like you said, they've come back. Funny enough, I had a recruiter fall in my inbox last week, and me and him last worked together was like 2021. But he just remembered me. Mm-hmm. He was like, hey, would you be interested in yada, yada, yada? And we got on a quick call. He already knew my numbers, because at the time I worked with him years ago, he gave me, it was some good numbers. So
that's right.
It just pays to be nice. I tell people all the time. Pays.
We go through it badly.
Yeah, I know, like, I don't know how familiar you are with a recruiter cousin, but yeah, so she works for Microsoft.
Okay.
She made a post about how some candidate found her personal number and hit her up on, like, a weekend or something like that, because she wasn't responding to their messages or something or whatever. And she made a post like, hey, I understand, like, I'm very accessible and helpful, but that's, like, totally unprofessional. Correct. And that's, you know, you're past my boundaries when you're reaching out to me on my personal phone. And you should have seen, I'm going to have to send you that after this. I'm going to send you the replies and stuff on that. It was just crazy. It was YT people on there talking about they'll been good if they was in sales and everything else. And her husband, he's also in tech too, and he had, like, a good analogy. He was like, just because I know where you stay, don't mean I should just come pull up to your house. Exactly. And I was like, hopefully everybody get that analogy, because it's like, whether it's HR recruiters, I will only text whatever number you Correct. Give me. I won't just text if somebody says, oh, text this recruiter. Or if that's the case, I will ask the recruiter beforehand, hey, I gave your email out, or I gave that number out to an applicant. I think that'd be a good fit. They may be texting you. Or is it okay if they text you or something like that? And if they say, yeah, cool. But if not, they don't know who it is, and you just texting the person now, you potentially mess yourself up just because it's like, you kind of, you're doing too much. Yeah. Especially at the time. And there's a time and a place to reach out to people too. Correct. Not like too late, weekend, people trying to enjoy themselves. Like, it is what it is, fam. Like, if you ain't been denied yet, you know, maybe the job has already been filled, but they'll let you know something eventually.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been cursed out. I've had angry calls, messages. I've had candidates say, you know, you should just kill yourself. Like, I've been through it. All recruiters have. And again, it doesn't help you because word travels. Secondly, just as when you're dating, I mean, desperation doesn't look good. So if you're following up with that recruiter every single day and you're pushing boundaries like that, logically, we're going to take a step back and say, well, what's wrong with this person? Why aren't they able to land anything? Like, what's going on? Why are they so persistent? And that puts red flags in the eyes of the recruiter and the hiring manager. And then now you've been cut off from that resource. So yes, definitely being mindful of boundaries.
Yeah, I agree. It is just like dating. Like, what, Destiny Child? What's that song?
Yeah. 100%. Yes. Yeah. We're definitely aging ourselves, though.
I mean, that's cool. Every man or woman has been a bugaboo for somebody before. So it's perfectly normal. That's the name of the game. You learn from it. You grow from it. So
hopefully that person learns and they never do it again. That is bizarre.
Yeah, man, they be doing a lot of weird stuff. So now the fun stuff. Another thing from your perspective. We talked a little bit about ATSs, mm-hmm. right? And then we have, and I say this to the end, when you said, you know, they think about this magic machine, AIs, the ATS, and is, you know, weeding people out. But I know that was a good selling point for resume writers. ATS friendly resume, mm-hmm. you're guaranteed to get an interview and all this type of stuff. I've never really used it as a selling point because I know a human has to interact with the Correct. Resume I create for you. So, because, okay, we are here. ATS friendly resume. Take the job description, put it in the smallest font, put it on the resume, apply. You know, people still out there saying that too.
Yeah.
Do y'all see people do that? Like, have y'all had people put the job description on a resume in white font?
Yes. We have had people do that. But guess what? The ATSs, like Workday, Taleo, a lot of them are now updating with certain software that detects that underlying font, and it's automatically kicking your formatting out. So your resume will look perfectly fine to you, but when we see it, it's like underlying font. So it looks like it's like superscript here, superscript. It looks terrible. And then automatically we know you're playing around with your resume. Still, again, it's not automatically magically declined. We're still looking at it, but the formatting is completely thrown off. And now we know why.
Yeah. And that's the crazy thing too. So if you had to tell somebody to make a resume, and then, I mean, you can say perfect resume, but like, I think like the simpler, the better, like, you know, a lot of people got a lot of stuff going on a resume. What would you advise for them? Cause you've probably seen like at this point, thousands or probably 100,000 yes. resumes.
So my favorite method when it comes to a resume, everyone mm-hmm. talks about STAR for interviewing, but when it comes to actually reviewing a resume, it's the WHO format. I will scream that from the mountaintop. And I will put that on a t-shirt. The WHO resume format, the abbreviation stands for what you did, how you did it, and the outcome. Your resume is essentially your brag sheet, right? It's talking for you. So with every bullet that's written, it shouldn't just be copy-paste from the job description. Well, I did this. Okay, well, that's great. So you did this, but how did you do it? How did you streamline? How did you lead that initiative? And then what was the outcome of that? Were any clients won? Did you drive sales for the business? Did you reduce some type of error? You know, that's what you want to show. You want to show impact. A lot of people are writing these lengthy resumes with these extravagant words, and the summary or the professional objective statement is like 6, 7, 8 lines long. We're not reading that. I will be 100% honest and forthcoming, and I will say that on average, you know, we only have about 5 to 10 seconds to read a resume. I'm looking for buzzwords. So if I'm looking for someone that's in cybersecurity, I don't see RMF, I don't see, you know, certain terminology, I'm not even going to keep reading. So you've put hours and hours and hours into this resume, but because you're not matching it to that job description, all that time has been wasted. So impactful statements, and then a job description that's matching with those buzzwords. How do you find buzzwords? If you're applying for the same type of positions consistently, you're going to see the same kind of requirements. And those requirements should be present in your resume.
Facts. I always got a saying when I'm reviewing or consultations, like, hey, you doing a lot of, what do I call? Are you doing a lot of telling, but not exactly. showing? Exactly. There you go. I was like, yeah, because like what I run into is when people are trying to get in the blue team or cyber.
Red team. That's my area.
Right. Yeah. They put a lot of these skill sets like in the technical skill section, but in the job description or no projects. I'm like, how is somebody supposed to know you know how to use these things if we can't see you utilize them throughout the resume?
Exactly.
Or I'll see somebody that got like, it's a person that's wanting to get in and they got more skills on their resume than I probably do. And I'm like, I need to figure out what you know on here and what you don't. Cause I was like, if I leave it on here, it's free game for them to ask you.
Exactly.
And if you make yourself like you this cold with your home labs, they're going to grill you.
Exactly.
So I'm like, we just going to keep it honest right here. We can work on some of the other things. But I'm like, I'm telling you, like, Because I've been through it. I used to do this thing where any tool I touched at work, I still have my resume. Sometimes it's been somebody I hadn't touched in 2 or 3 years. Mm. Where, and I think they was nitpicking me one time, but they was asking about the stuff. Oh, what did you use, you know, Anacam for? Oh, I used it for this. And it's like literally like one thing I used it for. So it really wasn't something necessarily that I need to have on my resume at the time. And that was a lesson, like, hey, don't oversell yourself. After that, all the crap I couldn't talk about a lot, I X'd it out. So
yeah, leave some room for curiosity. Don't have it all there, right, black and white. You know, we want to call and actually have a discussion with you and actually create that space for you to expand upon your skill set. So don't put it all there. I'm also firmly, unless you are desperate, I'm firmly against posting your resume on LinkedIn as well. Why? Because again, mm-hmm. you're restricting that conversation. You want a recruiter to reach out to you and actually have that conversation so you can definitely speak to your skill set. You put everything out there immediately, nobody wants it. Same with dating. leave some room for a curious mind to lay. So yeah, I'm against that as well.
Speaking of LinkedIn, I'm one of the people who tell people, I'm not like telling you, oh, you shouldn't just do Open to Work, but I'm against the green banner because I feel like it's no different from having it hidden.
Correct.
I'm using it as a leverage play of a company possibly thinking I'm still working where I work at. Like you say, I'm just going to keep it honest with y'all. Y'all already know this. My fellas know more women are interested in you when you are taken versus when you're single. Don't tell me wrong, but it's the truth. Every time on LinkedIn, you can book it. If you announce you got a new job, a recruiter going to be in your inbox within 5 to 10 minutes. The job. It's never failed. So I'm always just trying to perception. This whole job search process is perception and it's a sales game. And so you're trying to establish your leverage and how much leverage and what value that you could bring to this company. And so that's why I want you to move like that. It's not because I'm against it. You know, you have these few people, like, it don't make you look a certain way. I just think it's like, and this is for women to decide, but like, you know, whether you got the curly fro, where you got the waves, where you got the locks, depending on, you know, what you got and what they like, that's going to work for them. So maybe some of them, the ways for them is, you know, no Open to Work.
Yeah.
Maybe Open to Work represent, you know, dirty locks. I mean, you never know. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to looking over a candidate's LinkedIn profile, because, you know, in many interviews, I've had them say, yeah, you know, I like your LinkedIn. I've seen it. You know, I've had interviews open up with like icebreakers that I've used on my podcast, which actually, those actually mean like a lot to me because like you looked into me for real. So I like things like that. It shows me like regardless if I get the role, like y'all have people that are dedicated to making the interview process great.
Yeah.
Which are things that I've all been like kind of very critical on lately when it comes to hearing the horror stories, or I listen to my clients' interviews sometimes and I'm asking myself, like, why is this person interviewing me? Like, I want to run into an interview where they try to waste my time where I'm like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, and I would tell everybody, hey, do not interview at so-and-so.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm the same way. If I hit a snag with an employer, you know, my family knows, my friends know, and if someone comes up to me and they say, hey, what do you think about? I'm like, wouldn't recommend it. But with LinkedIn, I mean, there's a way to be subtle if you're open to work. You don't need the green banner. You can literally just do it to a point where you can change your settings to say only recruiters can see that you're open to work. But to be honest with you, I'm reaching out to you whether you're open to work or not. If I have a position to fill, I'm not just waiting to see who's out there.
Shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I also tell people like, so for example, when y'all are searching people through that, y'all are looking for, like, I know it's like a recruitment function
LinkedIn
that y'all use. Mm-hmm. And so y'all typing in like those skills that we were talking about earlier, that would be like on a resume or something that a person may have.
Yep, that's what we do. So we're searching for skills. What a lot of people also falter on is actually updating that skills section on your LinkedIn mm-hmm. profile. So with us, we don't purely search and solely search based upon your job title, because that can vary again based upon the industry. So you want to make sure your skills are present and those buzzwords are throughout your LinkedIn profile. There's a way that you can add that to each employer. There's a way that you can also add that to your profile as a whole. You definitely want to make sure you do that versus just focusing on throwing some titles up.
Yeah, for sure. I always tell people too, like, we look at the skill sets to try to find a job versus the titles. Because like you said, every title is different. You can have three or four titles for one role and it's all the same.
Exactly.
Role. And that's why you're missing out on some stuff.
Right.
Now, here's the fun question that I didn't ask you. And I try to ask them towards the end because I don't really make my episodes about like money and stuff. But I know a lot of people want to know, like, what could they expect? Like, if they want a career in HR, you know, like the salary transparency episodes, like, what could they experience, like, salary rise? I know it's kind of like we talked about earlier, depending on, like, region and industry. But I guess on the average, what does that money look like?
Sure. So, you know, I say I can't relate to this new generation because when I came out of college, I was probably, I think my first HR role, I was a generalist. I was making, like, 40K. Which is laughable now to people coming out of college.
That's most of our origins.
Yes, that's where I started. But as I've advanced, as I've kind of played in between different industries, you know, you go the HR route within like big tech, gov tech, DOD space, easily well over six figures, easily. But getting your bearings, you know, the nonprofits, the audit and advisory, they usually start you out at about 70, 80. But you know, there's a lot of us in our circle, our TA circle, we make in excess of about 170, 180. And that also depends on if you're a contractor, right? Because we get paid more for contracting out our services. Looking at the total comp package, it's a very lucrative industry. I'd recommend that everyone join. Come on the HR side. We need more advocates on our side. And honestly, I need more people that look like me in my space. So that would be great. But coming in the door with HR, you're on the lower end, but you put in that work, you learn those key terms, you hit your metrics. It's very easy for you to rise up in the ranks.
Thank you for that. You know, they're not trying to put that work in. Now, since you said that, what would be some skills or what two things, like either skills or transferable skills that a person can use to start an HR career? And do they need a degree for it?
So the beautiful thing about HR is they really don't have a focus on a degree. Sometimes they're just trying to get you in the door. So my degree was more of a plus than it was a requirement. It's not a huge push for it. Additionally, for transferable skills, definitely conflict resolution. That is going to be major in HR. Why? Because you are speaking directly to candidates. You know, you're working in the best interest of the company. I'm controversial in that, right? I do both. I'm going to spill tea to candidates so they know what to ask for and how to prepare for the interview. But you have to also keep your hiring managers happy. You have to keep your manager happy. Your metrics have to be hit. And you also have to really be able to manage different priorities. That's going to be very, very important in HR because things change in a moment's notice. So if you can juggle tasks, you can handle conflict, you can mediate, you'll be successful. I love my industry. I couldn't imagine doing anything else. I'll probably be in it forever unless, you know, y'all pull me into cybersecurity. Then I'll come on that side.
Listen, we all for diverse teams, and that don't just mean race. That means background. So we definitely all for that. Okay. Next question is, what's a question that I didn't ask you that you wished I would have asked you?
Ooh, that's a good one. Oh, gosh. So what, I mean, the advice I'd probably leave with everyone that's in the job market, you know, just kind of remember, sadly, because, you know, it's a sign of the times, you're up against what used to be maybe a handful, you're up against thousands now. So you really have to, again, the word of the day, impact. So for me personally, LinkedIn, I probably have about 400 connection requests that I could think about today. The ones that stand out, the people that are sending me the connection requests, hey, I saw X position was open. Here's my experience. Here's how I can make a difference. Those are the ones that I see, not just, you know, that usual LinkedIn phrase that, hey, looking to connect. Everyone is. We're all looking to connect. But what else? What else past that? So the average recruiter, you know, we're seeing an uptick in people reaching out on LinkedIn, sending several messages in. But unfortunately, not everyone is going to stand out. So I'm always recommending every time you have an interaction with someone, it's your virtual elevator pitch. So that's really what I want to sell. Like every time you reach out to a recruiter, I even have my clients go above recruiters' heads. If like you're a business analyst and you're trying to become a business analyst at another firm, reach out to other business analysts at that firm. Their inbox isn't as clouded. There's referral incentives for bringing you in the door. So be creative and be impactful and be intentional about your interactions.
Yeah, that's facts. Like I said, we on the same frequency because my clients say, yeah, that's what you tell us. Because I have the scripts for recruiters, a possible hiring manager, director, somebody on the team. I got them simple scripts because sometimes they'll show me what they sent somebody. I said, man, they not finna read all that. All these connection requests they got, everybody's mentioning them about a job they just posted there. Not about to read all that. Keep it short, sweet, to the point in your note in the connection request. That'll actually help you out better. So it's like, send them a note in the connection request.
Yeah.
Like, they're only anomalies. Like myself, I'm kind of anomaly to where I don't have to do that as much only because when people click, they're like, oh, this person has a lot of followers. He may be somebody on LinkedIn. So I don't tell people to do stuff as I do. Now, when it's stuff I'm interested in, I will go click something up and find a hiring manager. I show them all the time. I'll go find somebody on the team. Hey, how you like working at so-and-so? Oh, it's pretty good. Oh, word? Yeah, I applied to so-and-so role. I think they're like, word? I think you'd be good on our team. Like, I've verbatim people have said that to me just because they know I am. And like you say, impact advocate. They see me on a weekly basis or talking about different things that happen in the industry. So I'm demonstrating my value that could possibly be on their team if they needed it. And that's why when it comes to people pivoting into cyber, I'm really big on them to start doing blogs or video walkthroughs so they can get comfortable talking about this stuff. But two, like you said about putting your resume on LinkedIn, let's say somebody put a resume on LinkedIn, they got these projects on there. Who's to say somebody can copy what your projects are and put it on your resume? Now you need to figure out, do they actually know this stuff or not? So that's why I tell people that, because it's like, the hard part is you're going from something you don't do every day to trying to do it. And if you don't talk about it enough, you're not going to be comfortable enough to display that you know about these things in an interview. And so when I put it to them like that, it's like, yeah, you got a point. Like, I'm telling you, I listen to people all the time. It's like, yeah, they're just not confident yet. And it's like, that's another dating thing. Like, if a dude looking down and he approach you in person, like, you know, hey, can I have your number? And then he say, versus the guy that approaches, like, hey, how you doing today? My name's so-and-so. I saw you from across the room. I got a jet out of here, but I'd love to get to know you more. Could I grab your number, your Instagram? I'd love to grab some coffee or do something. Mm-hmm. Right pitch, straight to the point. And then if he's smelling good or whatever he got going on, you might say, okay, let me see what he's talking about.
100%.
Same thing in the job search.
Yeah. And I wish, like you said, people use LinkedIn for that as well. You know, whenever you pick up a new skill, you complete a course, you know, hey, this is what I learned. Advertise it. You know, recruiters, we see that. We can see your activity. Oh, this person just learned this. Okay. They seem pretty ambitious. They seem self-driven. Like, those are all great selling points to a hiring manager. And guess what? You know, once you have that interview, odds are the hiring manager is going to look you up on LinkedIn. So you just want to continue to have a great portfolio across the board.
Facts. And then like little tips I do is if it's a company that's a well-known company, I'm always like before talking to them, I'm researching them in the news. Like, so I can prepare for the interview. That's the biggest part of preparation. And I'm bringing up like, hey, y'all, I know you can't really say if y'all are dealing with this, but are y'all dealing with this incident right now? It was like, the manager was like, I can either deny or
That's accurate too. That stands out to us. I couldn't tell you how many candidates I've spoken to. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, what interested you in this company? Well, I mean,
I need a job.
And I'm like, this isn't really going to sell well with the hiring manager. So again, I mean, everything comes back to the dating comparison, right? Everyone wants to feel like they're the only person. So you want to do your research, make that company feel like you've placed them on a pedestal, that you really are you know, focused on joining. They feel comfortable. They feel special. And it leaves a lasting impression versus, well, yeah, I've applied to 1,000 jobs. What position is this? I mean, I don't remember. That sticks with us. It leaves a pressure.
Be intentional with your job search. That's another one. But I want to ask you, what would be two or three things you would want to leave the viewers with?
So for one, being a PK, of course, I'll say, you know, just kind of hold on. You know, it's a lot more difficult out here because of what's going on in the market with the economy. It's not necessarily your skill set. It's just the nature of what's going on. So if you're noticing a certain job search strategy is not working for you, switch it up. You know, reach out to your peers, reach out to people who have landed another job, you know, get another opinion. You never want to keep doing the same thing over and over and over and over. It's insanity, right? You want to switch up your approach. I would also say leaning on your network. I know so many professionals that do not know how to network. They're nervous. They're shy. Well, I don't want to reach out to recruiters. I don't want to feel like I'm begging. Well, guess what? There are hundreds of people that are afraid to do that. So you're getting left in the dust. Just be confident, like you said, in networking, reaching out, being impactful, and going the extra mile. Like, don't just, I apply for 3 jobs today. Oh, I'm great. Like, I did my due diligence. No. You have to put that work in. Nothing is coming easy these days. Put the work in. You know, apply for the position on the company website, not Indeed or LinkedIn. Go to the company website, apply online. Once you apply, reach out to like at least 3 individuals at that company. You know, you have to continuously keep your foot on the pedal and push forward. So be creative, be innovative. You know, if you need to take a break, if you're financially able to do so, take a break because you don't want to be drained going into an interview process. Everything just takes time. And then, of course, lean on, you know, like yourself, lean on credible individuals for assistance. Credible. They don't have to be, you know, they don't have to have 1 million followers on LinkedIn or Twitter. Do your due diligence. And if you're tapping out of options, you just want to hear from someone that has that expertise, reach out to them, you know, pay that service for a consultation. It can only help you in the long run.
Cool. And where can they, and also for the listeners and of course watchers, but where can they follow you?
You can find me on Twitter. Oh, sorry, X. See, I'm just aging myself. X at Humbly Chic.
And how do you spell it?
HUMBLYCHIC.
Perfect. I will have that in the description, guys. And, you know, like I always say, man, until next time, let's stay textual and we out. Peace.